And what you gonna do when Hulkamania and the largest arms in the world run wild on you?
Let me out of the shed again. Hello and welcome to Four Panel, the Geek Show's very own comics, manga, and not fan service podcast. There's a hint there for later on in the show. I am Rob and I'm joined by the reliable duo that are always on the show, Andrew and other Rob.
Hello.
Prob, as we call him.
Hello.
Help, Rob burst in and he won't leave and we don't know what to do.
You could have put a bigger chain around the door in the shed, otherwise it'd still be there now.
Fine.
Locked
next
away.
Time we're using the electrified fence.
Did you have Rob in your shed all this time, Andrew?
Anyway, what's been going on?
So how is everyone this week?
I'm better than last week on account of the heat not being skin melting.
That is good. I like it when, you know, skin is a solid and not a liquid.
Yeah.
I know cats have this, the both solid and liquid things, very, you know, down path. But I don't think humans are meant to be that way, too. It's just not right.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Comics, though.
Yes, comics.
Yep, so comics. We have a bit of bad news to start off the show, unfortunately. Steve Ditko has passed away.
Yeah, so
I know this is a stupid question. I mean, we all know who he is. But if you don't know who he is, who was Steve Ditko?
Steve Ditko. I mean, to be fair, you might not know who he is because he was famously a recluse.
Yeah.
But he was also basically one of the architects of modern comic books. Like, he co-created Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, like, and especially did a lot of work on Doctor Strange, pretty much all the weird astral dimension stuff, like, especially you saw in the Doctor Strange film.
Yeah.
That was all from Steve Ditko.
Well, Doctor Strange was kind of his baby, though, wasn't it? You know, that was the one that he really went to town with, because I remember reading something about the creation of Doctor Strange, and he said that he was trying to reflect some of the times that, you know, that the comic actually was birthed in.
Yeah, there was times when everyone had giant amulets and went to other dimensions to fight fire gods.
Of course they
did. Was it a 60s comic?
Oh, it was a very 60s comic.
Yes. Oh, it was so 60s.
That's the golden age, isn't it?
Off the show, Rob. We give you one chance and you just immediately blow it.
Oh, it could have been worse.
But no, the 1960s is commonly thought of the start of the Silver Age.
Yeah.
Okay.
If they're punching a Nazi, it's Golden Age.
Yeah.
If there are aliens in, like, seven-dimensional cuboid machines, Silver Age.
Yeah.
So Silver Age, the Golden Age, was a lot of sort of post-war.
Well, not just
kind
post-war.
Of propaganda-ish.
Kind of. Think all the way from Action Comics number one up to Nazi punching is Golden Age.
So Silver Age, as Andrew said, it's when you think of what comics are now, the Silver Age was sort of that first step into creating them.
Well, where do you think, where does the Silver Age actually end, Andrew?
See, I was just trying to think.
Because
I think Silver Age.
I think
because Golden Age is very definitively like the 1930s to the start of the 1960s.
Yeah, Silver Age I think ended around the early 80s. I'd say.
Oh, so yeah, it's very much like creating
like mid 70s.
You reckon mid 70s? Because there was a lot of comics I read in the 80s that were still very much very similar to comics from 1960s.
Regardless of like the ages, the point here is Steve Ditko was like responsible for basically creating the visual languages of what comics are now.
Yeah, basically, because of comics like Doctor Strange, it opened up a lot of artists' eyes and a lot of writers' eyes to the possibilities of just expanding the comics universe out into the universe.
Yeah, I mean, simply put, Ditko is basically the person who said, what if comics were just weird?
Yeah.
And that's what I love, because that's what I love about comics, is the idea that, like, you can just draw something you wouldn't see in any other form of media.
He also made it popular as well, though, that's the thing. And I think that was the important thing about it. He made it accessible and popular.
One of the most influential people in comics, basically.
Yeah.
I mean,
and not only was he co-creator of Spider-Man and and Doctor Strange, he did all sorts of other stuff. I mean, he worked on Incredible Hulk. He penciled Iron Man and various things like that. The Iron Man that was featured in Tales of Suspense, that is. He also did some work for Charlton Comics and for DC Comics as well.
Oh, yeah. Like, he invented a ton of characters. Pretty sure he invented the Blue Beetle.
Yeah, The Question. Captain Atom is one of his as well. And Captain Atom at the time was kind of... he was kind of a human equivalent to Superman, I suppose. He was the nuclear man before there was a nuclear man.
Oh, nuclear man.
Not that nuclear man.
Hang on, isn't there like...
Although basically they are the same person.
Hang on, isn't there then going to be like three nuclear men then? There's Captain Atom, and then there's Firestorm, who is the nuclear man. It's in his tagline. And then there is the nuclear man.
So it's basically Firestorm, the nuclear man, but not that one.
Yes.
Captain Atom, also the nuclear man, but again, not that one. And the nuclear man.
Just to move it on, when you said he penciled the Iron Man.
Yeah.
I had the image of him just in a back alley with a pencil, sticking it, shoving it in him. And that'll show you, Iron Man, your ideas and your thinking.
To be fair, Steve Ditko was, like, notoriously crotchety, so if anyone was going to stab Iron Man with a pencil, it would have been him.
Yes. Yes, it would.
Let's see who else he invented. Okay, so he invented Hawk and Dove.
Yep.
And, oh my god, he invented Punch and Julie, who like ended up showing up in Suicide Squad, and it's some of my favorite like weird obscure characters.
Oh,
Changing Man.
Oh, Andrew, I have to mention this because it's a throwback. Apparently in 1974, Steve Ditko, working for Charlton Comics, did Liberty Bell backup stories in E-Man. Do you remember E-Man?
E-Man. That random comic we have just lying about the back room.
Yeah, the one that we couldn't figure out. What is E-Man? We don't know.
Clueless raver in the 90s.
Is it a Christian comic in which they use to scare people off drugs?
No, unfortunately.
I mean, I've never actually read it, so I can only assume yes.
Excellent, let's go with that.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we've done enough beating about the bush. It's time to talk about Steve Ditko's most famous creation.
Yes.
Freaking the Creeper. The Creeper who, I assume, Rob, you don't know about the Creeper.
To be honest, there's so many, I don't think anybody's heard of them all, let's be fair.
Oh, you need to look up the Creeper.
Yeah, the Creeper is,
He is a man in bright orange spandex and kind of red tight underpants, and also a massive fur collar who fights crime by jumping on people's backs.
Yes.
Oh, wow. There's an image of him.
Also,
the name is correct.
Yeah, also, he's kind of a stalker as well. He's got stalkerish tendencies, if you've read any of the Creeper comics.
I mean, his name is literally the Creeper. What did you expect?
Thing is, some might say Batman has stalkerish tendencies, but he gets away with it by being the world's greatest detective. I'll have you know I'm not a stalker, I'm a detective.
Yeah, but the thing is, he looks like the sort of character you'd wake up in the middle of the night and he'd be sniffing your sock drawer.
And Batman wouldn't.
I mean, at least Batman would just turn around and yell, "I'm fighting crime."
Oh, apparently the wedding didn't go down as well. This is a spoiler for anybody who's a Batman Catwoman fan, right? So,
I mean, to be fair, the New York Times spoiled it well before us, so...
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we knew that DC were going to do drama somewhere along the lines there, weren't they?
Is that in reference to something?
Batman and the Creeper can get married instead.
Yeah. Batman proposed to Catwoman. Catwoman said yes, they were supposed to get married, but DC insisted on inserting loads of drama, and now they're not going to get married. In fact, they're basically all but broken up.
Would they go down the aisle? Would they go down the aisle as Batman and Catwoman, though?
I saw one of them too, but it literally is a plot from EastEnders.
See, I assume what happens is Catwoman has like a tiara with little cat ears on, and Batman just has a big button on it that says, "I'm not Batman."
That sounds like the Lego Batman. Maybe you've preempted the sequel there, Andrew. Maybe.
maybe I have. I mean, one. Whoever makes that movie, call me. And also pay me, please. I need money so bad.
Have we got any other news?
Nope, that's it. We are a low news day.
Some slim pickings.
I do have something to fill the time, though. Because I've been watching that there Luke Cage season 2, what's on the Netflix. And yeah, it's some good stuff. So this season, he is fighting Bushmaster. I want to say Diamondback, but no, that was the guy from the first one.
I was going to say.
It's literally that just last episode of season 1 over and over again. Just then standing in the street punching each other for 13 episodes.
Ah, comics.
Bushmaster sounds like the sort of person who'd make really bad puns. But it given that it's kind of Blake the series, the Netflix series, I don't think that's going to be true.
Thing is, it also sounds like a multi-purpose tool that you'd use in the wilderness. The Bushmaster 3000 has a saw, has a knife.
Imagine it has an infomercial.
I'm thinking more like 80s oh. He-Man-esque knockoff, but set in the Australian wilderness.
I started, I know I'm a little bit behind, I started the first series of Daredevil. Thought it was good, but there was an awful lot of he's not Daredevil before Daredevil.
Yeah, that's the main annoying thing, that like he puts the Daredevil costume on literally like the last episode.
I mean, I started the first series of Jessica Jones, but I'm unsure so far.
I think Jessica Jones is one of those ones that it gets better as it goes on. And then has like a little dip around the last few episodes, but then comes back strong for the last one.
I'll eventually complete the series and catch it up, but the one which, like, Defenders, how was that? And nobody really seemed to talk about that one.
I think Defenders was like pretty fun, just not like particularly special.
Hmm.
I think for something that is basically supposed to be like the Avengers, but for the TV characters, like it just didn't capture that magic.
Okay. I mean, in the first series of Daredevil, the reference some event that happens nearby, and there's so many events in the MCU, I don't know what the hell they're talking about.
That was like specifically the events of the Avengers.
And just destroying everything again. So where does this fall in? Season 2 of Luke Cage, where does this fall? Does it have like a sort of tell about where it falls in the timeline?
Just at some point after the Defenders series. Mm. Like, I think they've kind of decided to stop trying to tie it into the movies so much, which I'm a fan of because I hate it when they're like, what about the green guy or Mr. Man with a flag on his chest?
It's not like the corner shop where it's clearly like Captain America, but it's National Flag Man.
National Flag Man.
I don't know why. Like, you're owned by Marvel, you can just call him Captain America.
No, they can't. We had this with US Agent, remember?
I don't know what knockoff version of Hulk would be, but
that would be Bulk.
The Indomitable Bulk.
Yep.
There we go. I mean, I'll continue with the Netflix series, but it seems like they're on a downward curve now, from what I've been reading.
See, I would say, like, they have been a bit, because, like, the first two seasons of Daredevil are great. First season, Jessica Jones, like, I thought was incredible, but I think it is a bit Marmite-y. Luke Cage was like, the first half of Luke Cage was fantastic, and then the second half was kind of less so, but I still liked it.
It had some good parts in the first half.
Sucked. And then I think that's maybe like the big problem that Defenders had. What was coming off all that Iron Fist bad will, it just didn't do enough to kind of redeem the franchise.
Yeah.
And Punisher killed everybody.
Well, you know, that's what the Punisher does.
Oh, yeah, I forget the Punisher is like technically related to those shows because he's just off doing his own thing.
As he always is.
Yeah, then Jessica. No, I'm going to come out and say it. Season 2 of Jessica Jones was terrible.
Yeah, but I mean, Marvel seemed to have this problem with the second season of a lot of things. I mean, remember the first season of Agent Carter?
Oh my god, yeah, it is exactly the same as Agent Carter, but like, the first series is like one of my favourite shows, and then the second series is so bad.
Yeah.
Luke Cage season 2 was a lot of fun. The main thing that impressed me with this series, I think it did a better job of actually having a story that spread well across across the 13 episodes, like, there wasn't so much a point where it just feels like it's trundling along, like, well, like a lot of the Marvel shows do.
Yeah.
Especially towards the end. But no, I think this one kept a peppy pace.
Awesome.
And Bushmaster's great. Because, look, I'm not going to lie, 99% of the reason why I like him is he's got an amazing Jamaican accent.
That's always a plus.
Which, you know, I like the voice, but also I think it helps kind of exploring another side of Harlem's black culture, which, you know, because that is what Luke Cage is really about.
Yeah.
And I like that. It's cool. It's fun. Awesome. Also, I know we talked a lot about Defenders a little while ago, and I think Luke Cage also manages to do, like, the one miraculous thing that Defenders did, which is actually make Iron Fist a fun character.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, the thing that works when you take Iron Fist out of his own show is whenever he, like, makes his pseudo-philosophical nonsense babble, it's fun to have Luke Cage just standing next to him, like, rolling his eyes and thinking, what the hell is this white man nonsense?
I think that's one of the things I really enjoy about their relationship in the comics. Is, I mean, the two of them are basically, like, they're basically like brothers. You know, Luke is the older brother, and Danny Rand is, like, the younger, kind of spoiled little brat who he keeps getting in trouble and then running to his big brother, getting his big brother involved. My God, that is the relationship between the two of them, isn't it?
It is, but also I like that, like, Luke Cage is this big, but, like, quite serious and reserved guy. And then you've got Danny Rand just running around like an excitable puppy.
Well, that's what I mean. Can you imagine if it was a playground, Danny Rand had run into some trouble with the other kids? And you go, I'm going to get my big brother on you.
It's fun because, like, you basically do have those scenes when, like, they break into a warehouse full of drug dealers and Danny just, like, jumps behind Luke because they all start shooting at them with machine guns.
Exactly.
Oh, also, Iron Fist gets an amazing costume when he shows up in the series.
Oh.
By which I mean, he wears a green hoodie with Sweet Christmas written on the back.
I like it.
Yeah, so, oh, also what's really good this season is we finally got, like, proper Misty Knight.
Really?
Yeah, just, like, being a sassy, no-nonsense badass with a robot arm.
Awesome.
Because if anyone's watched Defenders, and I guess if not, this is a spoiler, but it's been out for ages, what are you doing? Because Misty got her arm chopped off in that.
Yep.
So, basically, Iron Fist just, like, makes her a robot arm. And also, there's this great implication I like. Like, because before she gets the arm, she gets given, like, a schematic for it. But instead of, like, a detailed blueprint, it's clearly just, like, a drawing that Danny Rand has done of a robot arm. Like, you, like, see him going to his tech, and he sounds like the screws here, and goes, so, or he just, like, doodles it on a page, okay, make that now, please.
So basically, like a six-year-old would describe, you know, Iron Man's gauntlet.
I don't like Iron Fist. I don't like that he's just a child.
Yeah. Awesome. So Luke Cage Season 2 is definitely worth watching, then.
It is. Also, do you know what I think weirdly helps?
Oh?
The fact that, like, because in this Bushmaster, his whole thing is he wants to take down Mariah Stokes, who's, like, the head of all the Harlem gangsters now.
Yeah.
So it's not so much, like, a thing that Luke is personally involved in. It's just, like, a bad guy that he wants to stop. And I think that helps because it gets rid of a lot of, sort of, the moral hand-wringing that I feel like drags down some of these Marvel series.
Yeah.
So, like, there's always a point where the hero's like, oh, but should I stop the villain or should I not? Or should I just give this whole thing up? Okay, but no, you are going to go fight the villain and keep being a superhero. Because that's what this series is.
Yeah.
As long as none of them are as bad as Daredevil's friend whose name I've totally blanked on. But he was annoying.
I don't get all the hate for Foggy Nelson, even though he does do that exact thing that I don't like.
Yeah. Because there's a character around that, you know.
But yeah, he shows up in this as well.
Ah, nice.
And he's actually fun, because we learned that Foggy Nelson is surprisingly really into Wu-Tang Clan.
Okay, now there's a connection you didn't think that was there.
I think I'm going to have to catch up with all the other series now and finally make my way through them. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Also, I have very good news. In this series, Luke Cage does say, where's my money, honey?
Oh, seriously? Okay,
the best Luke Cage line.
Yes.
Okay. Oh.
Hello, I'm Professor Elemental, and whenever I'm not riding a badger around my grounds or hitting my monkey butler with a stick, I'm listening to The Geek Show, and my God, I love it.
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literally Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literally Loitering.
If you've enjoyed the show so far, then head to our website where you'll find all of our other shows, which you can also find on Audioboom or Apple Podcasts or the podcast provider of your choice. Our website also has reviews of various things, and also our Patreon and our shop where we have some delightful wares. Show your support. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook or on Twitter, which is, Andrew?
At £4 Podcast.
Or you can email us at studio@thegeekshow.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Dave from Geek Corner, and if you pop yourselves along to the Regency West Mall in Stockton-on-Tees, you can find a range of things from comics to manga, anime, Magic the Gathering cards, Pokemon cards, pretty much any sort of TCG. Prop making, we have props for sale on the shop floor as well. We do pretty much everything, so if you're into your cool geeky stuff, get yourselves along.
Yo, Luke! Yo, Wishmaster whipped your ass again, didn't he?
It was the other way around, man.
Oh, now where's the video of that?
You still the hero of Harlem, right?
My cousin's getting smacked around by the cops because he has dreads. Every Jamaican ain't down with Bushmaster.
Hey, hey, you need to handle this, Luke. My little sister can't even sleep at night.
What are you gonna do?
Yo, I'm doing the best I can, okay? Look, I'm sorry about your brethren. And I'm gonna handle Bushmaster, all right? And young lady, I promise, I'm gonna put a stop to all of this.
No, you ain't. You ain't no better than the damn cops.
Oh, damn. She got you. That's some cold shit.
Let's go.
And welcome back to the show, everyone. Now we're going to be talking about stuff what we've been reading with our eyes and whatnot.
Yes.
And our brains that, you know, turn the ocular input into data that runs around our brains and does stuff. That's how reading works. There, you've been scienced.
So, Rob, what, are you going first?
Yeah, I'm going first.
What have you been reading?
The first thing I've been reading is from Archie Comics. Somehow I've become our resident Archie correspondent. I don't know how this has happened, and I hate you all for doing this to me because Archie is so very, very, very American. This is the complete Cosmo the Merry Martian. And Cosmo's one of those side characters in the Archie comics that appeared back in 1958. And so this has the comics from 1958 to 1959, and then the massive jump in time to 2014, when Cosmo made a reappearance, and then the 2015, 2017, and 2018 comics. So it's all of them in a handy portable size, and Cosmo and his best friend Orby are the first explorers from Mars to head towards Earth. And Cosmo leaves behind his beloved sweetheart, Astra, and he and Orby board their rocket ship from Mars, head to Earth, only to land on the moon and meet the moon people, who are small Mr. Men-type characters who are all spherical. Then from there, they have adventures where they go and meet the Queen of Venus, who wants to marry Cosmo, and they have various adventures on Earth, yada, yada, yada. But they don't meet Archie in any of them. Not at the beginning, anyway. And then it spins on to the modern comics, where all of a sudden Cosmo is part of a team with Archie and Jughead and various other characters. The characters in this super team, so to speak, Archie, Catgirl, Super Duck, Captain Sprocket, Captain Pumpernick, Cosmo the Merry Martian, and Jughead. And then it's the kind of very sci-fi-esque modern-day adventures of Archie and Cosmo and the rest of the gang as they take on various things. And the art style is very different to how it was in the late 1950s. Although Cosmo, they've managed to keep looking kind of the same as he was back then. But then you've got, like, the ultra-modern Cosmo number one, which came out in January this year. and they've redesigned the character completely. It's got like a very modern Ben 10 Cartoon Network style to it. It's weird because what I'm looking at here is the transition of a character who's gone from a little bit Fred Flintstone, so to speak. You know, he's gone.
Oh, that's Cosmo.
Yeah. He's gone from a little bit kind of Fred Flintstone-ish, early Hanna-Barbera cartoonish, into this modern kind of galactic police force type character, you know, with
I'll
a ray
honest,
gun and everything.
As you were talking, all I was thinking about was Cosmo, who lives in nowhere in the Marsmo Cosmic universe, who is the best dog in the world. He's just great as Cosmo.
No, not
he
that Cosmo.
He is a very good boy.
He is a very good boy.
Yeah.
And if this was about that Cosmo, I would have been much happier. But it's not. It's about Archie's Cosmo, the Merry Martian. And Cosmo in the 1950s, I'll admit, Cosmo in the 1950s, it just reminded me of the early Hanna-Barbera cartoons. You know, a bit tongue-in-cheek, but really quite inoffensive, you know? Not really breaking any new ground or anything like that. Cosmo in 2014, when he's part of the team with Archie and the rest of them, okay, fair enough, it's Archie. It's kind of what I expect. But Cosmo 2018, I'll admit I'm not a fan of. I can see the point. I can understand why they've changed the character designs and everything to be more with the youth of today. But, yeah, I'm not a fan.
Has Cosmo ever had any individual comic runs? The dog one?
No. He should absolutely get his own miniseries.
What are you playing at, Marvel? Cosmo the dog's amazing. It's the best. Sorry, that's the only input I have in your comic role, but...
Well, yeah. Let's put it this way.
I assume they won't give him a series because he's a dirty commie.
Yeah.
yeah, he is.
Let's put it this way. The 2018 version of Cosmo has a human character called Max Strongjaw.
He's called that's
that,
a name.
Yeah, he's called that because he has a big square jaw.
Clever. Is that what you're going to leave it on? Just the fact that he's called Max Strongjaw?
Yes.
I've been reading Frank, and he has not been appreciative. It's escalated, and let's just say I'm waiting for my court date. So, sorry, comic fans.
I mean, also, maybe please say a bit more.
No, it's actually a comic from Renegade Art by first-time debuting writer Ben Rankle. Frank is a town in sort of early 20th century Canada. There's a mine in the town. And the setup for this, which is why I picked it up because I thought it sounded interesting, is there's a murder mystery in one of the biggest incidents, like earth slides, in that point in Canada's history. Well, there's a murder in it and there's a slide in it. But we're talking about a book with how many pages? Flicking through. Well, it's not got a lot of pages. It's a very thin book. It's a hardcover. And most of the book is kind of aimless, sort of pottering around. It's technically a mystery, but it's not the most enthralling mystery. And the earthquake only really happens in the last five pages, and then it sort of skips forward into like the near future. The problem is, I think, is it's too short. It seems to be all about character development, but you get basically bare-bones character development, so I'm not sure who any of the people really are or what the story is or why I should care. And generally speaking, when it comes to independent comics, that seems to be what they go for more often than not. You know, they try to like build their characters up more than would be the case, like whoever Marvel or DC or, you know, one of the big companies. But it sets up this idea and it's just kind of higgledy-piggledy. It doesn't land any of the things that it's going for. As a murder mystery, it doesn't go anywhere. The earthquake doesn't really happen. You just have like a few pages of rumbling and then it cuts the people being picked out of stuff, which ain't great. The art style is fairly typical indie comic. I mean, it's good because it's our one person. But at some point, there's certain characters where I wasn't sure whether it was a man or a woman. There was a character called Lucy, and it looked like a man. But at the end of it, I thought, hang on a minute. That's a woman character.
Have you been reading One Piece again?
No, because they're boobs to all heaven. You know, you can tell the difference there.
I was on about Luffy being called Lucy in the Colosseum.
Yeah, but it's interesting. a historical comic book is interesting, but I think the problem is, end of the day, it's just too short for all the ideas it has. None of them really feel all that fleshed out. I mean, Brian K. Vaughan sings its praises, and so does Troy Nixie, but at the end of the day, it just feels like it could have been like another 100 pages long, and I think it could have been the book that it promises to be. But that's not to say other people won't get something from it, because historical comic books aren't exactly North American historical comic books aren't exactly the most common of things. So it's a small niche, and this is one of it. So if you're looking for something in that niche, go ahead. But I was expecting a little bit more, I'll be honest. Nah.
I mean, it sounds like the actual interesting part doesn't really happen until the end of the book.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, is that it? It's finished now. That was like a page. That's boring. I wanted more.
Yes, but I didn't think they would like set it after the earthquake happened.
Yeah, it's a sort of rebuilding the town. There's a reference that the town was basically destroyed and they never stopped to sort of take note and take stock of the fact that the town was destroyed. They just sort of went on and kept on working. It's like, I would like to have seen that, you know, but sure, go ahead, rush through it. That's fine.
Oh, no. Do you know what it's made me think of? That one film whose name I can't remember. But it stars like Robert Pattinson, you know, him off of Twilight fame. That's like this really boring standard romantic drama thing.
Twilight?
And then suddenly at the end, it's just like, but surprise, actually it was 9/11.
It is, basically.
Like standing in a tower block and he looks out and just sees like a plane flying towards the building.
I don't know this film.
I think I've willfully forgotten the name of it.
That's good. But yeah, that's Frank. See, when you said name for a comic book.
When you said Frank, I thought it was going to be like, you know, the film Frank. Which is about Frank Sidebottom.
Yeah, that'd have been great. I'd have read that in no time, but this was just, interesting, but underdeveloped.
Frank Sidebottom in that film, magnificently played by?
The Bender, Michael Fassbender.
I was waiting for Andrew to answer.
He is the master of the fifth element.
Yes.
He bends Fass.
He's the Avatar. Let's be clear on this.
So that's that. Next. Who's next?
Andrew.
Yeah, that is me. So I have been reading Sherlock Frankenstein and the Legion of Evil, which is by Jeff Lemire with art by David Rubin. And this is a spin-off of the Black Hammer comic series, which I think we covered volume one of.
Yeah, we covered the Secret Origins. We covered ages ago.
So anyway, basically to fill people in on the details of that series, Black Hammer is about a group of superheroes who, while fighting a being known as the Anti-God, get sucked into a strange otherworldly dimension. But this isn't about them, so who cares? This is about Lucy Weber, who is the daughter of one of the heroes that disappeared, the titular Black Hammer.
Mm.
And it's about her going around, basically trying to find out what happened, because the world believes that all these heroes died in the battle. But she's convinced that they're still alive. And kind of while on the hunt of them, she finds a list of all her father's old enemies, the top of which is his arch-nemesis Sherlock Frankenstein, who is a undead Victorian mad scientist.
The best kind.
Yeah. And so Lucy sets off, basically on a quest to interview all the other villains to try and find out where Sherlock Frankenstein has gone to, and does he have any answers about what's going on? And it's, it's a fun series. It's one of the things I really liked about Black Hammer. What was how much it worked in like tropes from, obviously from like all the superhero comics across the years, you know, with characters with like very obvious stand-ins and, you know, kind of plots that revolved around of how comics have progressed. And so it's nice to get something more focused on that world. And also, much more importantly, we get some more top-notch villain and hero pun names. Because we are also introduced to Wingman, who was basically like very obviously just Hawkman, who is now like, he was a Golden Age superhero, and now he's just like this wizened old man with like little chicken wings on his back.
Okay.
And he runs like the big maximum security prison with, you know, his chief warden, Concrete Stador, whose name is almost impossible to say. Basically, he's like the thing, but made out of concrete, and is Spanish.
Nice.
And then there's also some... Oh, there's also the horseless rider, who is like... I just love his design. He's like this cowboy, but with like Jack Kirby-style discs all over him, which is fun. And then the villain names that are fantastic. Because you've got like Metal Minotaur, which is just a rad name. Manaconda, who is a man without snakes. And best of all, a character who like gets an entire issue dedicated to him, Cthulhu. Not Cthulhu. Like, it's great. He's a plumber who like fell down a manhole and accidentally met one of the elder gods, who transformed into like his earthly avatar.
That's great.
That power to become a petty thief. That's what like, you introduced to him, and he's just like sitting at home in his overalls having a smoke, and like all like the weird green scaly stuff is like disappeared from the top of his head, so it looks like he's balding, and he's just a really friendly guy.
Sounds fun, which is not what I'd expect from Jeff Lemire. I expect I don't know what this is, and scratching my head for about half an hour after I finished reading it.
I just know that this is really fun.
Do you know, while you were talking about the original Black Hammer comic, I just realised what it reminded me of. It reminded me of, you remember Justice Society of America from DC?
Yeah, I think it's definitely like very heavily inspired by the Justice Society.
Yeah, rather than the actual Justice League, because the Justice Society had like the original Flash, the original Green Lantern, whose powers were magic, apparently, rather than, you know, needing a lantern to charge his power ring.
Also, fun fact, originally the first Green Lantern fought entirely train-based crime.
Yep.
Nice.
But yeah, because I think it was All-Star Squadron went on to the Justice Society or something like that. I'll look into it. But yeah, when I read Black Hammer, I was thinking, hang on, I'm getting shades of something. It reminds me of something. And it's literally just hit me while you were talking.
Well, I'm glad I could help.
Yes.
You've showed me on the Black Hammerverse, though.
The Black Hammerverse is great.
And like I said, this is just a spin-off, so it's nice and light. It's a four-issue mini-series, and it also includes issue 12 of Black Hammer, because that sets the whole thing up. That's just, you know, it's a nice quick to breeze through. That's just, you know, a good way to get a bit more information about that world.
Hmm.
But also, I would say it's not super necessary.
Cool. So, me then, yes?
Yep, back to you.
And me, I have something very, very interesting. I managed to steal this before Andrew got his grubby little mitt on it, because he always steals all of the Mike Mignola stuff. So I stole this before he could.
Which is very unfair of you.
I'm happy I did. Because this isn't just by Mike Mignola, but this is also by Troy Nixie. This is Jenny Finn. And it is actually set in London's Dockside, and the time is about the Victorian time, so there are shades of steampunk in there, and, you know, the Victorians used to be into their, you know, their spiritualism, the occult, things like that. So there is that in there as well.
And you sound unsure of this.
I'm not unsure of that. Why would I sound unsure about this? I've just said.
He's talking with a raised inflection. I'm unsure about everything when people do that.
That's just you, Rob. Anyway, it is in the Dockside, and in the Dockside, you have the fishermen bringing in the fish from the North Sea and from the river, and you have a boy selling newspapers, and he's selling newspapers where the headline is, "Murder! Foul, bloody, horrible, goddamn murder!" Apparently, the whore killer strikes again, and the first thing you think is, this has something to do with Jack the Ripper. Kind of? Maybe? But then scene cuts to a brothel where one of the punters, not one of the women, one of the punters, has basically died and turned into something that fell out of Cthulhu's backside.
Just like Cthulhu.
Hey.
And then...
So dumb, I love it.
No. And then some guy who's wearing a mask called Prime Minister turns up and looks at the remains of the guy. And the scene shifts to a young girl who's walking through the streets, and she's talking to these guys who have these horrible disfigurements, and she's saying, you know, everything's going to be okay, gives them a little bit of money, moves on. And down in a bar, there is a guy called Joe who sees this girl and he thinks, this is a really rough part of London. This is like a horrible part of London. What's a little girl doing by herself here? And so he takes it on himself to try and be, you know, to try and be the good man. Because he's come from the countryside. He's earning some coin to take home, set himself up, maybe with a business. But only for him to run foul of whatever this young girl is, because they have nursery rhymes about her. They have stories about her. And she keeps saying to Joe, I'm all right here. I'm wicked.
Of course, because she's from East London.
Yeah. But the thing is, I love the phrasing there. So what follows is Joe's...
Rob. Actually, yeah. I have an important question to ask you about this book.
Yeah.
Do you really like it? Is it wicked?
It is both. I do really like it, and it is
so
wicked.
So you're loving it. You're loving it like that.
Not like that. Not like that at all. The thing is, what follows the Joe's first meeting with Jenny Finn is that Jenny recognises that Joe is deep down at heart something different to what she's met in London up to that point. And so, you know, see, Jenny, you've obviously guessed Jenny's not human, but there's a tragedy to this story as well. And I think that's one of the things I absolutely love about this. Remember those Hellboy comics, like The Chained Coffin, where Hellboy actually finds the grave of his mother but doesn't actually realise it's his mother's grave?
Yes, I do know, because I like my Hellboy. I'm a big Mike Mignola fan. Chuck Jenny Finn.
All I'm saying is there's a tragedy to the character of Jenny Finn, which I really liked. Because she's all very different, and because of things like religion and belief, and because of rules and society, and because of all sorts of things, nobody can see her as anything other than a monster, something Cthulhu-esque, kind of a female Cthulhu, something that can control the hearts of men, something from down in the blackest pit beneath the sea, and something that, you know, some people call the Messiah. In all of London, there's only Joe who thinks, you know, she didn't have to do any of this stuff. I've got to help her. Not I've got to, you know, worship her or anything like that. Just, I've got to help her. And that's one of the things I love about this, is that there is this element, there's this thread of humanity thanks to the character of Joe. Otherwise, this would have been a horrible, depressing book.
That's really depressing.
What?
I've only got BP. Hellboy and the BPRD, and Hellboy the Complete Short Stories Collection to do.
I will bring you Jenny Finn so you can read it.
Yeah, I guess that's all right.
But yeah, Jenny Finn, I love the artwork, I love the pacing, I love the storytelling. It takes elements from things like the Jack the Ripper stories. It takes elements from Lovecraft, obviously, with the Cthulhu-esque references.
I mean, literally what you're saying is you like the fact that it's a Mike Mignola comic.
Well, it's Mike Mignola and Troy Nixie, and I think the two of them work very, very well together. And I love the fact that there's a huge misunderstanding when you start reading this. You start off thinking that Jenny Finn is a monster, and your expectations are that there's something monstrous going to happen the further you get into the book. But then you find that the monstrous things aren't what you expected, and that's just, you know, that's just Mike Mignola through and through.
Is she from the block?
No, she's not that Jenny. That was a very bad one.
I couldn't think of any Jennies. I'm sorry. Andrew took the good one.
That's why we only have one musical reference per review, Rob.
Is that you, done, Rob?
Yes.
Yeah, I have a manga.
Yes.
And it's a fun one.
Yes.
It's called Colosseum.
Yes.
Not Colosseum, as I first thought. And I just want to set up some of the details from it. Art style is kind of like Fist of the North style, or a bit modern. It's done by Yasushi Baba. And some of the characters, there's a Russian president who's called Alexander Putinov. It's not Putin, it's Putinov.
Okay.
They'll never suspect a thing.
No, but you think that one's good. There's another one. There's a high-ranking American woman official, and you know what her name is?
I'm afraid to even guess.
Billary Quinton.
Oh, Japan.
See, I had a flick through this when we got it, and I stopped at the bit with Vladimir Putinov and the tiger.
Yeah, because it's got these things in it called peacekeepers, which is like a bracelet that you put on your hand, and it basically makes you the fittest version of yourself, basically impervious to harm, bullets, guns, swords, and you can punch through people and punch their heads off. And as he's making a display to a Japanese official, he chops the head off a tiger with his hand. You know, just because. He's got his shirt off as well because he's Putinov, and that's how Putinov rolls. And there's also an American character called Axe Bogun. Utters the line, what you gonna do when the axe runs wild on you? Which is a Hulk Hogan reference. And apparently in the back of the book, there's something which Hulk Hogan said a lot in America is Hulk Hogan Ichiban, which means Hulk Hogan number one. But Japanese people found it hilarious because it sounded like he was saying Hulk Hogan Ichiburn. So in like the Japanese translation, he doesn't say what you're going to do when axe runs wild on you. He's going Ichiburn in English.
Fantastic.
The idea behind it's got a sense of humor, which is pretty obvious just describing it. But the plot behind it is those peacekeepers. There's the Russians who have them and want to get further in the technology and take over the world, make it peaceful, by having these people, which basically look like characters from sort of 1990s American comics or Fist of the North Star, whose strength is so ridiculous. There's one character called Alexander Karolinkov, who's so strong. He has like this massive chain. He picks up 100 Chinese officers and suplex them all at once. You know what he calls it?
What?
100-man suplex. He's clever. He's really clever.
He's descriptive, at least.
At least he's advertising his moves properly. It's not a 100-man suplex, but he only suplexes like 99 of them.
No, he kills them all as well. There's a character called Li Yan Yong, who's basically Bruce Lee, but he turns into a dragon, a human dragon.
See, that would just look bizarre. A human dragon.
Yeah. Rasputin's in it. He didn't die in the Tsarist Revolution. He has lived on over 100 years, and he can predict the future.
Is he still horny as hell?
Not so far, no.
I mean, to be honest, that's the most believable thing you've said.
Well, it's still book one. And the robots, the people who wear the peacekeepers, the Fertum is Cernobogs, which is an odd name.
Oh, Chernobog. Is that C-Z-E-R?
Yeah.
N-O, yeah? Chernobog. Isn't that something like a, what was it? It's some kind of hound, isn't it?
I have no idea.
That is the Russian god of darkness.
Is it the Russian god of darkness?
I never knew that.
Try reading a book sometime, Rob. More specifically, American Gods, because he's in that.
Oh, yeah. I thought I recognised it.
And there's other characters. There's a character called Sasha. I don't, it's Russian surname, so blah. But she's like the perfect example of somebody who has the peacekeeper. She's not become like a muscle-bound idiot. She's just sort of a buxom manga girl.
So you know, basically, they took the character designs from Gears of War.
No, she's just a normal, like, she's statuesque and tall, but she just looks like a fashion model.
That's what I mean. They took the character designs from Gears of War, where to lift these guns, the men have to look like they were built in shipyards, but the women all just look like normal women.
Oh, right, yeah. She's got
terrifying when you think how super strong all those women must be.
Exactly.
The sense of humour as well, sort of a deadpan. She meets a character called Rumi, who works at a maid cafe. And I'm going to read this one scene. There's a nerd in the maid cafe and says, one mega-sized parfait, please. Oh, it looks so yummy, Rumi-chan. And the next page, it's got Sasha, who says, lunch is available in set ARB, but considering your body fat, I suggest ordering a salad drink set. Also, to reduce your body odor, I propose a herbal blended tea with rosemary and mint. Which completely burns him.
But someone's getting a bad Yelp review.
It's total exploitation in every sense of the word, but I don't think it's cynical in any way. You know, I mean, it's like it's fan service because the female characters are all buxom, especially a Japanese character who appears towards the end of the book, who's basically wearing underwear. You know, like a Quiet from the latest Metal Gear Solid.
Oh, hey, that's not fair, Rob. She needs to wear that to breathe through her skin. And now that we know the real reason for her nudity, we are all ashamed of our words and deeds.
Oh, yes, of course. But it's exploitative, but it's just so incredibly silly and over the top. It's a blast to read. You know, and I can't wait to read more of them, really. I mean, I've never heard of Golosseum. I don't think you've even heard of Yashushi Barber, but Kodansha Comics have plucked this one out and, you know, released it. And I'm so glad that they did, because it's just so, so fun.
Yeah, this is actually one that flew under my radar as well. I'm usually quite on the button with these. If I'd noticed it before, I would have told you about it. But
it's got a few little sprinklings of fan service, but it's modern manga. You can't really evade that. Not mark something down because it has it, but
yeah, I mean, thing is, it's the type of manga. You said it yourself. It's exploitation. Would it be fair to say it's like Putin's exploitation?
Yeah, well, it's Russia's exploitation. It's rated OT for 16 and up, so it is like a drive-in movie. That's the way I'm thinking of it.
Yeah.
Like a drive-in movie turned manga.
And it's definitely an exploitation manga.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. It's fun. It's great fun.
Yeah, but
it's got Billary Quinton.
You like your exploitation stuff.
It's Billary Quinton, Rob. It's totally not that person. It's Billary
Quinton. Oh, no. What was it? Axel Borgun or something like that?
Axe Borgun. Yeah. Don't let go to see him, book one. And it's great. It's great fun.
See, I really want him to basically start introducing other world leaders and just give them like weird names like Angela Merkel and Barack Obama. And
they've got other characters, other patriots they call the Cernobogs in America. And I just hope it's really bad ripoffs of American wrestlers from the 1980s. Like the next one's Macho Man Randy Savage. And that'd just make me happy for years. So, Andrew.
Yeah, so I have been reading a big old chunk of Avengers No Surrender, was written by, deep intake of breath, Al Ewing, Mark Waid, and Jim Zub, with art by Pepe Larez, Kim Jacinto, Mike Perkins, Sean Isaacs, Paco Medina, Joe Bennett, and Stefano Caselli.
Wasn't this like a tome?
Yeah, this is 15 issues long.
Wow.
Oof. So this was kind of Marvel's big event, but not an event because, shush, we don't do any of those anymore. But maybe if we keep doing them, no one will notice. Just before they did their latest reboot, which saw all three of their Avengers titles of crossover. So this is Avengers, US Avengers, and Uncanny Avengers. And the plot sees basically a deliberate callback to one of the older Avengers stories where they got wrapped up in a game between the Grandmaster and Kang. Kang being a time travel bad boy man person. And the Grandmaster being one of the elders of the universe who is addicted to gambling. So this, like I said, it's a similar plot. This time the Grandmaster, turns out he wasn't always the Grandmaster. He won his title from the original Grandmaster, who is now back calling himself the Challenger and wanting his title back. And so to settle the debate, they have stolen the Earth and are using it as a battleground between their respective forces. And the Avengers, you know, get dragged into the middle of that and have to basically fight to stop the entire planet from getting destroyed. And I think what's interesting is that a lot of the big Avengers aren't in this. It's right at the beginning of the story. Most of Earth's heroes get frozen in stasis, which I assume was mostly done as a convenient, well, where was X when this was happening? Oh, they were frozen, it's fine. Yeah, but it also means, like, there's no Captain America in this. There's no Iron Man. Thor, this is still the Jane Foster Thor.
Okay.
Spider-Man isn't here. So it's like, it's a bunch of characters like the Wasp and Vision and like Beast and Wonder Man are there. Rogue is there.
It's a very odd mix of characters.
It is. I think like Hawkeye is probably the biggest name Avenger in this story. Actually, I guess Hawkeye and like a Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver as well.
And Rogue. Rogue's fairly popular, isn't she?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just don't think of Rogue as like that big of an Avenger.
Well, she's not really that big of an Avenger. She's very much the X-Men.
Yeah, like I think of her as like one of the top X-Men, and just to rest, I almost forget she's an Avenger as well.
Yeah.
But that being said, we do get the return of the Avengers' most famous and popular member.
Oh?
Who's been missing for years and years.
Let me guess.
Okay, go ahead and guess.
Missing for years and years. Is it one of the original Avengers?
It is one of the original Avengers.
Hmm. Was it missing for years and years? Thor?
No.
Original Avengers. Damn it. I'm trying to remember the original Avengers lineup. Iron Man?
No.
Hulk?
Well, he does actually come back in the story, but that wasn't who I was talking about.
Okay, you're going to have to tell me.
Voyager, Rob. Everyone knows Voyager.
Who the hell is Voyager?
Voyager is Valerie Vector, one of the founding Avengers and indeed the heart of its team.
When did this happen?
Actually lost the first time they fought the Grandmaster, but it turns out she was just shunted out of reality and is now back to help the team.
Hang on, when was she a founding Avenger?
Well, that's the problem, isn't it, Rob? She never was. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, wow. That's a twist I never saw coming.
No, it's cool. It's basically like what they did with the Sentry, where they have a character who pops up and then suddenly everyone's like, oh yeah, I remember them. They've actually been here for ages and ages, but we forgot about them.
Okay. But
they also then pull a fun twist on that I enjoyed.
Okay, but it took them 15 issues to do what Sentry did in, like, 3.
Well, no, because, like, she's just a part of it.
Ah, okay, right.
Like, the main thing is them trying to stop the fight between the Grandmaster, who has assembled his new lethal legion of a bunch of characters who, like, were introduced in this and are probably never going to be seen again. So I'm not even going to mention who they are, because who cares? They were my least favourite bit of this.
Hmm.
And the Challenger conveniently decides he's going to resurrect Thanos' Black Order, almost like they recently appeared in some kind of massive blockbuster film.
Yeah.
But yeah, this, I think it certainly has some problems with the story. Like, especially, you know, like I said, the Lethal Legion, like, not really being much of a thing. And, you know, certain plot points, you know, taking a while to resolve. But ultimately, I had a lot of fun reading it. Like, it reminds me of, have you ever read the original Secret Wars?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a lot like that, and it's just big, fun, you know, fighty action comics.
All right, awesome. I used to love the original Secret Wars.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's what events should be, you know, just like a fun, just, you know, big, exciting brawl.
Well, what I loved about the original Secret Wars was there was no kind of setup to it. It was just the Beyonder said, look, bunch of years are on this planet, fight it out, right?
This is very much the same in that, like, the heroes wake up, oh dang, Earth has been moved, there are bad guys, punch, fight, go.
Yeah. The other thing I loved about Secret Wars, though, was that you had these shifting alliances in there, because you had the X-Men siding with Magneto, but then there was a scene, I remember this, I've never forgotten this, Spider-Man is listening in to this meeting of the X-Men. He's not been invited. Nobody knows he's there. And he overhears Xavier saying that the X-Men should go and join Magneto, who's one of the opposing factions, because mutants should stick together. And so when Spider-Man realizes the danger, he goes to warn everyone else. And Charles Xavier basically wipes his mind of any memory of that. Doesn't kill him, but does something that Charles Xavier never really did in comics a lot.
Someone hasn't read X-Men comics.
Not at that.
Xavier is a bad, bad dude.
No, he is a bad dude, but that came a lot. That came after.
Yeah, this is good. Also, do you know what I like? One of the characters involved in this is Living Lightning.
Really?
Like this random, very D-list Avenger.
Yeah, Living Lightning is like, really?
Yeah, and it's fun because they actually play it as he is the guy who's just like, oh Jesus, how have I ended up here? This is like way out of my league.
Yeah,
I was an Avenger for like 5 minutes. I just want to go home.
Living Lightning, Rob, do you know who Living Lightning is?
It's the gremlin from Gremlins 2 who became Lightning after one of them caught him in a phone line or something.
Kind of. It's basically teenage... Imagine if Electro was a teenager and was part of the Avengers. It's basically yes. That. Basically, he's a sentient lightning bolt.
That's stupid.
It's comics.
Okay.
Also, he ends up having to play the Grandmaster in a game of poker for all the Earth.
Wow.
Also, I'll admit, what my absolute favourite bit of this, because like I mentioned, the Hulk gets brought back, and this is like basically the lead-in to the Immortal Hulk series, which I'm sure we'll cover on the show at some point, but for now I've been talking a little bit about on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I absolutely freaking love, because it's like the Hulk coming back to life, but as like some kind of malicious vengeance-fueled spirit.
Yeah.
Smart Hulk as well. It's great.
Oh yeah, like, not just Smart Hulk, but Smart Mean Hulk.
Yeah.
Like, there's a bit where he fights Wonder Man, who's now on, like, a whole pacifist thing. And quick tangent, having a superhero who's a pacifist really doesn't work well.
No, because the superhero way of solving things is punch it.
Yeah, like, that's like, you can't have him be right about punching not being the way to solve things, because then you don't get any punching.
Who thought this was a good idea?
Solves his crimes through hopscotch.
But yeah, there's a bit where like Wonder Man just tries to talk him down, and then Hulk just like completely turns the tables. Just like go on, like as if while he's punching him, just says like, "You're a Hollywood snob drowning in ego, preaching non-violence when it's easy, and violence can't ever reach you. Well, I can reach you, and I can hurt you."
Yeah, see, I like this Hulk.
Yes, it's great. He just like destroys the Avengers.
Well,
they convince him to turn on the Challenger.
Yeah.
I love the way Hulk leaves the series. It's basically like he goes, starts wailing on the Challenger, and like, then the Challenger's like, "You actually hurt me," and then punches Hulk into space. And then you just like see Hulk flying off into the atmosphere going, "Hurt him," and then bursting out laughing. As just like the other Avengers just watching, like, what the hell is going on? So yeah, I had a lot of fun with this series, and I think this is definitely the way to read it, because I can imagine at the time, I think it came out weekly when it was being put out, but that's still
yeah,
like 15 weeks of just one event comic is a lot.
Yeah, it's not great, is it?
Is it the entirety of the event, though?
Oh, yeah, it is. Like, the whole thing from start to finish, which again, I think is another thing in its favour, is it's contained to just these issues. Like, you don't have to then go out and buy like 15 different tie-in series and also like a prequel and epilogue chapter.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's good fun popcorn comics.
Which is what Hulk really should be.
And I think that'll probably about do us.
So yeah, that's it from us. Until the next time, I have been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've also been Rob.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.
Ichiban!